however, said a word to the others. It would break poor Harker's heart, certainly his nerve, if he knew that we had even a suspicion on the subject. Van Helsing examines, he tells me, her teeth very carefully, whilst she is in the hypnotic condition, for he says that so long as they do not begin to sharpen, there is no active danger of a change in her. If this change should come, it would be necessary to take steps. We both know what those steps would have to be, though we do not mention our thoughts to each other. We should neither of us shrink from the task, awful though it be to contemplate. Euthanasia is an excellent and a comforting word. I am grateful to whoever invented it. It is only about 24 hours' sail from the Dardanelles to here, at the rate the Tsarina Catherine has come from London. She should, therefore, arrive some time in the morning, but as she cannot possibly get in before then, we are all about to retire early. We shall get up at 1 o'clock, so as to be ready. 25th of October, noon. No news yet of the ship's arrival. Mrs. Harker's hypnotic report this morning was the same as usual, so it is possible that we may get news at any moment. We men are all in a fever of excitement, except Harker, who is calm. His hands are as cold as ice, and an hour ago I found him wetting the edge of the great Gurkha knife which he now always carries with him. It will be a bad lookout for the Count if the edge of that kukri ever touches his throat, driven by that stern, ice-cold hand. Van Helsing and I were a little alarmed about Mrs. Harker today. About noon she got into a sort of lethargy which we did not like. Although we kept silence to the others, we were neither of us happy about it. She had been restless all the morning, so that we were at first glad to know that she was sleeping. When, however, her husband mentioned casually that she was sleeping so soundly that he could not wake her, we went to her room to see for ourselves. She was breathing naturally, and looked so well and peaceful that we agreed that the sleep was better for her than anything else. Poor girl. She has so much to forget that it is no wonder that sleep, if it brings oblivion to her, does her good. Later, our opinion was justified, for when after a refreshing sleep of some hours she woke up, she seemed brighter and better than she had been for days. At sunset she made the usual hypnotic report. Wherever he may be in the Black Sea, the Count is hurrying to his destination. To his doom, I trust. 26th of October. Another day and no tidings of the Tsarina Catherine. She ought to be here by now. That she is still journeying somewhere is apparent, for Mrs. Harker's hypnotic report at sunrise was still the same. It is possible that the vessel may be lying by, at times, for fog. Some of the steamers which came in last evening reported patches of fog both to north and south of the port. We must continue our watching, as the ship may now be signalled any moment. 27th of October, noon. Most strange. No news yet of the ship we wait for. Mrs. Harker reported last night, and this morning, as usual, lapping waves and rushing water, though she added that the waves were very faint. The telegrams from London have been the same, no further report. Van Helsing is terribly anxious, and told me just now that he fears the Count is escaping us. He added significantly, I did not like that lethargy of Madame Mina's. Souls and memories can do strange things during trance. I was about to ask him more, but Harker just then came in, and he held up a warning hand. We must try tonight at sunset to make her speak more fully when in her hypnotic state.
28th October. Telegram. Rufus Smith, London. To Lord Godalming, care of HBM Vice Consul Varna. Tsarina Catherine reported entering Galatz at 1 o'clock today.
Dr. Seward's diary, 28th of October. When a telegram came announcing the arrival in Galatz, I do not think it was such a shock to any of us as might have been expected. True, we did not know whence, or how, or when the bolt would come, but I think we all expected that something strange would happen. The delay of arrival at Varna made us individually satisfied that things would not be just as we had expected. We only waited to learn where the change would occur. Nonetheless, however, was it a surprise. I suppose that nature works on such a hopeful basis that we believe against ourselves that things will be as they ought to be, not as we should know that they will be. Transcendentalism is a beacon to the angels, even if it be a will-o'-the-wisp to man. It was an odd experience, and we all took it differently. Van Helsing raised his hands over his head for a moment, as though in remonstrance with the Almighty, but he said not a word, and in a few seconds stood up with his face sternly set. Lord Godalming grew very pale and sat breathing heavily. I was myself half stunned and looked in wonder at one after another. Quincey Morris tightened his belt with that quick movement which I knew so well. In our old wandering days it meant action. Mrs. Harker grew ghastly white, so that the scar on her forehead seemed to burn, but she folded her hands meekly and looked up in prayer. Harker smiled, actually smiled, the dark, bitter smile of one who is without hope, but at the same time his action belied his words, for his hands instinctively sought the hilt of the great cookery knife and rested there. "When does the next train start for Galatz?" said Van Helsing to us generally. "At 6:30 tomorrow morning." We all stared, for the answer came from Mrs. Harker. "How on earth do you know?" said Art. "You forget, or perhaps you do not know, though Jonathan does, and so does Dr. Van Helsing, that I am the train fiend. At home in Exeter I always used to make up the timetables, so as to be helpful to my husband. I find it so useful sometimes that I always make a study of the timetables now. I knew that if anything were to take us to Castle Dracula, we should go by Galatz, or at any rate through Bucharest, so I learned the times very carefully. Unhappily there are not many to learn, as the only train tomorrow leaves, as I say."
"Wonderful woman," murmured the Professor.
"Can't we get a special?" asked Lord Godalming. Van Helsing shook his head.
"I fear not. This land is very different from yours or mine. Even if we did have a special, it would probably not arrive as soon as our regular train. Moreover, we have something to prepare. We must think. Now let us organize. You, friend Arthur, go to the train and get the tickets and arrange that all be ready for us to go in the morning. Do you, friend Jonathan, go to the agent of the ship and get from him letters to the agent in Galatz, with authority to make search the ship just as it was here. Morris Quincey, you see the vice-consul and get his aid with his fellow in Galatz and all he can do to make our way smooth, so that no times be lost when over the Danube. John will stay with Madam Mina and me, and we shall consult. For so, if time be long, you may be delayed, and it will not matter when the sun set, since I am here with Madam to make report."
"And I," said Mrs. Harker, brightly, and more like her old self than she had been for many a long day, "shall try to be of use in all ways, and shall think and write for you as I used to do. Something is shifting from me in some strange way, and I feel freer than I have been of late." The three younger men looked happier at the moment, as they seemed to realize the significance of her words. But Van Helsing and I, turning to each other, met each a grave and troubled glance. We said nothing at the time, however. When the three men had gone out to their tasks, Van Helsing asked Mrs. Harker to look up the copy of the diaries and find him the part of Harker's journal at the castle. She went away to get it. When the door was shut upon her, he said to me,
"We mean the same. Speak out.
There is some change. It is a hope that makes me sick, for it may deceive us."
"Quite so. Do you know why I asked her to get the manuscript?"
"No," said I, "unless it was to get an opportunity of seeing me alone."
"You are in part right, friend John, but only in part. I want to tell you something. And oh, my friend, I am taking a terrible risk. But I believe it is right. In the moment when Madam Mina said those words that arrest both our understanding, an inspiration come to me. In the trance of 3 days ago, the Count sent her his spirit to read her mind, or more like he took her to see him in his earth box in the ship with water rushing, just as it go free at rise and set of sun. He learned then that we are here, for she have more to tell in her open life with eyes to see and ears to hear than he, shut as he is in his coffin box. Now he make his most effort to escape us. At present he want her not. He is sure with his so great knowledge that she will come at his call, but he cut her off, take her as he can do, out of his own power, that so she come not to him. Ah,
There I have hope that our man-brains that have been of man so long, and that have not lost the grace of God, will come higher than his child-brain that lie in his tomb for centuries, that grow not yet to our stature, and that do only work selfish and therefore small. Here comes Madamina, not a word to her of her trance. She know it not, and it would overwhelm her and make despair just when we want all her hope, all her courage. When most we want all her great brain, which is trained like man's brain, but is of sweet woman and have a special power which the Count give her, and which he may not take away altogether, though he think not so. Hush, let me speak, and you shall learn. O John, my friend, we are in awful straits. I fear, as I never feared before. We can only trust the good God. Silence, here she comes. I thought that the professor was going to break down and have hysterics, just as he had when Lucy died. But with a great effort he controlled himself, and was at perfect nervous poise when Mrs. Harker tripped into the room, bright and happy-looking, and, in the doing of work, seemingly forgetful of her misery. As she came in, she handed a number of sheets of typewriting to Van Helsing. He looked over them gravely, his face brightening up as he read. Then, holding the pages between his finger and thumb, he said, "Friend John, to you with so much of experience already, and you too, dear Madam Mina, that are young, here is a lesson. Do not fear ever to think. A half-thought has been buzzing often in my brain, but I fear to let him loose his wings. Here now, with more knowledge, I go back to where that half-thought come from, and I find that he be no half-thought at all, that be a whole thought, though so young that he is not yet strong to use his little wings. Nay, like the ugly duck of my friend Hans Andersen, he be no duck thought at all, but a big swan thought that sail nobly on big wings when the time come for him to try them. See, I read here what Jonathan have written. That other of his race who, in a later age, again and again, brought his forces over the great river into Turkey land, who, when he was beaten back, came again and again and again, though he had to come alone from the bloody field where his troops were being slaughtered, since he knew that he alone could ultimately triumph. What does this tell us? Not much, no. The Count's child thoughts see nothing, therefore he speaks so free. Your man thoughts see nothing, my man thoughts see nothing, till just now. No, but there comes another word from someone who speak without thought, because she too now know what it mean, what it might mean. Just as there are elements which rest, yet when in nature's course they move on their way and they touch, then poof, and there comes a flash of light, heavens wide that blind and kill and destroy some, but that show up all earth below for leagues and leagues. Is it not so? Well, I shall explain. To begin, have you ever studied the philosophy of crime? Yes and no. You, John, yes, for it is a study of insanity. You know, Madam Mina, for crime touch you not. Not but once. Still your mind works true, and argues not a particulari ad universali. There is this peculiarity in criminals. It is so constant, in all countries and at all times, that even police, who know not much from philosophy, come to know it empirically that it is. That is to be empiric. The criminal always work at one crime. That is the true criminal who seems predestinate to crime, and who will of none other. The criminal has not full man-brain. He is clever and cunning and resourceful. But he be not of man's stature as to brain. He be of child-brain in much. Now this criminal of ours is predestinate to crime also. He too have child brain, and it is of the child to do what he have done. The little bird, the little fish, the little animal learn not by principle but empirically. And when he learn to do, then there is to him the ground to start from to do more. Dos pusto, said Archimedes, give me a fulcrum, and I shall move the world. To do once is the fulcrum whereby child brain become man brain. And until he have the purpose to do more, he continue to do the same again every time, just as he have done before. Oh, my dear, I see that your eyes are opened, and that to you the lightning flash show all the leagues. For Mrs. Harker began to clap her hands, and her eyes sparkled. He went on, now you shall speak.
Tell us two dry men of science what you see with those so bright eyes.
He took her hand and held it while she spoke. His finger and thumb closed on her pulse, as I thought instinctively and unconsciously as she spoke. The Count is a criminal and of criminal type. Nordau and Lombroso would so classify him, and qua criminal he is of imperfect formed mind. Thus, in a difficulty, he has to seek resource in habit. His past is a clue, and the one page of it that we know, and that from his own lips, tells that once before, when in what Mr. Morris would call a tight place, he went back to his own country from the land he had tried to invade, and thence, without losing purpose, prepared himself for a new effort. He came again, better equipped for his work, and won. So he came to London to invade a new land. He was beaten, and when all hope of success was lost, and his existence in danger, he fled back over the sea to his home, just as formerly he had fled back over the Danube from Turkeyland.
"Good, good, oh, you so clever lady," said Van Helsing enthusiastically, as he stopped and kissed her hand. A moment later he said to me, as calmly as though we had been having a sick-room consultation, 72 only, and in all this excitement I have hope. Turning to her again, he said with keen anticipation, "But go on, go on. There is more to tell if you will. Be not afraid. John and I know. I do, in any case, and shall tell you if you are right. Speak without fear."
"I will try to, but you will forgive me if I seem egotistical."
"Nay, fear not. You must be egotist, for it is of you that we think."
"Then, as he is criminal, he is selfish, and as his intellect is small and his action is based on selfishness, he continues himself to one purpose. That purpose is remorseless. As he fled back over the Danube, leaving his forces to be cut to pieces, so now he is intent on being safe, careless of all. So his own selfishness frees my soul somewhat of the terrible power which he acquired over me on that dreadful night. I felt it. Oh, I felt it. Thank God for his great mercy. My soul is freer than it has been since that awful hour, and all that haunts me is a fear lest in some trance or dream he may have used my knowledge for his ends."
The professor stood up. "He has so used your mind, and by it he has left us here in Varna, whilst the ship that carried him rushed through enveloping fog up to Galatz, where doubtless he had made preparation for escaping from us. But his child mind only saw so far, and it may be that, as ever, in God's providence, the very thing that the evil-doer most reckoned on for his selfish good turns out to be his chiefest harm. The hunter is taken in his own snare, as the great psalmist says. For now that he think he is free from every trace of us all, and that he has escaped us with so many hours to him, then his selfish child-brain will whisper him to sleep. He think, too, that as he cut himself off from knowing your mind, there can be no knowledge of him to you. There is where he fail. That terrible baptism of blood which he give you, make you free to go to him in spirit, as you have as yet done in your times of freedom when the sun rise and set. At such times, you go by my volition and not by his, and this power, to good of you and others, you have won from your suffering at his hands. This is now all more precious that he know it not, and to guard himself have even cut himself off from his knowledge of our where. We, however, are not all selfish, and we believe that God is with us through all this blackness and these many dark hours. We shall follow him, and we shall not flinch, even if we peril ourselves that we become like him. Friend John, this has been a great hour.